Good afternoon, Wrangell. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:02, and we have our guests Rod Brown and Brian Lee in the studio today. They're here to talk about gardening. So, call in and ask a question or just say hi. That number is 874-2345. So, Rod and Brian, thank you for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
You bet.
All right. So, let's just go. Before we get into gardening, tell me a little bit about yourself. Brian, you start.
All right. So, back home in Florida, 3 years running a wholesale nursery, and then 3 years running a feed store with a garden center attached, and then 2 years in South Florida running an ultra premium nursery. It was on 2 acres with about $3 million worth of landscaping. And then a personal interest derived from my grandmother in gardening that started when I was probably 5 or 6. And that's kind of, so literally my whole life is like fishing and gardening related stuffs. So.
Absolutely. And how might people know you in town?
So most people know me as Slap a Fish or the Rock Carver guy. more than anything else. And a lot of people don't actually know, like in town, some people do, but don't actually know about the gardening side. So it's something that through Slap a Fish and any other public avenue, it's not really talked about a whole lot by myself. But it's a huge passion of mine. It's actually what got Rod, like how Rod and I got introduced.
Cool. Rod, go ahead. How might people in the community know you?
Well, Gene and I moved to Wrangell in 1969 to teach, and we taught until 1996, and then we raised our kids here and enjoyed living here, and so we retired, and we're still here, and still enjoying it.
Absolutely. And you taught the sciences. You also taught some math.
Yeah, and photography, and did the yearbook, and small school. You have to teach different things, different years, and that was part of the fun of it. And then, of course, I really enjoyed the kids in Wrangell, and the classes were smaller, and the town's small, so you don't lose track of the kids, sort of fun. I actually joined Facebook originally just to keep track of a lot of ex-students and see what they're up to.
And Rod and I actually met through Facebook, which is kind of cool. So and all of our correspondence happens on Facebook, even as friends. Like that's, I don't know, that's pretty neat.
Okay, I'll add Rod on Facebook now.
Yeah, you need to.
Okay, so let's get right to it. The show is about gardening, and I really, as always, I encourage people to call in. That number is 874-2345, but now is a really good time to do it because, you know, if you have any questions, you've got two people in the studio that are willing to help you out. So let's just kick it off with, you know, what kind of gardening are you doing as of late? What does your setup look like? What plants are you working with? Just start from there.
So, actually, after I retired, I always wanted to have a greenhouse, so I just built sort of an experimental greenhouse, and I don't know. It's been fun because now I can. I really wanted to raise sweet corn and tomatoes, and it's worked out real well. And both those, I don't get a huge amount of sweet corn, but generally I grow the sweet corn, tomatoes, and cucumbers in the greenhouse. Then outside the greenhouse, I grow flowers and other blueberries and rhubarb, and beans, and carrots. You know, and I try different things this year. I'm for the first time trying artichokes because you supposedly raise artichokes in Alaska, Southeast Alaska. And my son's done it down in Portland, so he sent me a couple of artichoke plants, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, I like to try new things every year.
Absolutely. Give me a sense of what your greenhouse looks like. How big is it? Where is it exactly?
Well, it's up in the backyard. It looks like a Quonset hut covered with plastic. It's what back Brian just helped me recover it this spring. But it's, I guess, about 20 feet long and 12 feet wide, and it's made out one-inch PVC pipe that's bent over a ridgepole and then covered with greenhouse plastic. And if you build a greenhouse, you can't just go down to the local hardware store and buy Visqueen, you really need to order special greenhouse plastic that has UV inhibitors in it. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't get the right kind of plastic, the stuff won't last very long at all. And then you'll be recovering it every year. Mm-hmm. And then in a greenhouse, it's important to have proper ventilation because, amazingly enough, in Wrangell, on a sunny, warm day, you can zip up over 100 immediately in the greenhouse. And tomatoes actually like it best about 85 degrees. So first of all, you got a big vent fan, and basically it's fairly easy to calculate the volume, approximate volume of your greenhouse, then buy the fans, and then you can find out how many cubic feet of air needs to be exchanged per minute, and then buy the proper size fans. And I've got a thermostat that turns on about 86, 87 degrees and starts the fans up, so when it gets too hot, this goes on, and then there's some passive louvers at one end and the fans at the other end. And so when the fans start, the air pressure just opens the louvers and in comes the cooler air. But you also have to have small fans that run continuously 24 hours a day inside the greenhouse because it's so humid in there that if you don't, things will start molding and stuff.
One thing I'd like to interject... Rod's mentioned so many different facets to his greenhouse, which he's got the coolest greenhouse that I've seen in Wrangell so far. No offense to anybody that I haven't seen your greenhouse. But if you're thinking about doing, you know, about building a greenhouse, it's actually for a few hundred dollars, you can have a setup to where you can have a greenhouse that you can experiment with your plants to where you can have plants out earlier and plants out later and so on. And it's really not, it's all, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, there's no reason you can't do that for a couple hundred bucks.
I'm curious, Rod. I mean, you have the greenhouse that allows you to do much more with your gardening than somebody that wouldn't have a greenhouse. Can you grow year-round because you have a greenhouse?
Well, if you wanted to spend the money to heat it, I guess you probably could. But Gene and I call gardening sort of living off the fat of the land. I don't remember if you remember that quote from of Mice and Men from John Steinbeck, but one of the characters is always saying, we're going to live off the fat of the land. Well, living off the fat of the land is sort of a joke because it means you spend a lot more money growing stuff than you would if you went down to Bob's or City Market and bought the stuff. But it tastes really good, you know, compared to the stuff you can buy downtown. And so that's it's a hobby, and I guess you could say it keeps me out of the bars and but it's, you're not going to save any money doing it, putting that way, but it is a lot of fun.
But anything with your yard is that way. It's just, it's a hobby. It's a pastime. But at the same time, those one or two meals where you have fresh tomatoes or fresh corn from the garden, the reason I started enjoying tomatoes as an adult, I feel like a child saying this, but as an adult was because of growing my own. I would not eat a tomato. I'd pull it off of everything that I'd ever eaten. And then you spend 3 or 4 months growing tomatoes and your appreciation level and your palate somehow seem to magically change as you go through all the effort.
And it's sort of fun, too, because like tomatoes, I know Bruce Eagle grows a tremendous variety of tomatoes, and I basically grow just one type. It's called Stupas, and it's fairly small, maybe at the largest, maybe the diameter of a 50-cent piece. But they're early, and so I get tomatoes fairly early, and my wife really likes them because they're nice and solid, and she likes to have a solid tomato to slice.
Absolutely. And then, Brian, tell me, what are you gardening these days?
So, my situation is quite a bit different than Rod's. I'm renting a place. I did procure rhubarb from Rod's the other day, and then my friend Cindy, I just got some horseradish. Any other gardening, I've not done anything yet because I haven't figured out how. I've basically got like an inch of soil or something resembling soil, and everything else is jagged, rocky, whatever, and that's what I planted the rhubarb in, and I hope that my landlord doesn't want to shoot me later on whenever that rhubarb's permanently attached. But so I'm more dabbling and goofing off and helping other people in theirs than I am doing anything in my own. But it's like the shoemaker's children don't have shoes, you know, kind of like that when it comes to, you know, if you are a gardener. Or, you know, landscaping and such, sometimes your own falls by the wayside.
Yeah. And Brian brought up a good point about the soil around here. I was lucky because I had some at least good basis for soil in my backyard. But so many places the soil is such, is either non-existent or not good at all. And in fact, my backyard, when we moved in, probably about 50 years ago, there apparently somebody had garden back there, but it was just full of salmonberries and everything else. So, of course, you got to get rid of those. But the soil is full of, I guess, slate, little pieces of slate. And so I built some raised beds to help the drainage and help warm up the soil in the spring. But then I spent several years with a screen, screening each bed down to probably about 16 inches and getting rid of all these tiny rocks in it. And I've got a huge pile of rocks back there that I screened out of my soil. And some, a lot of small ones, but also some large ones that I encountered. And then what you're left with is the soil. It's pretty heavy, very clay. So over the years, I've mixed in a lot of peat moss, composted manure, sand, and you know, each year I add some more compost. But you really got to have to work hard to make the soil decent enough, because even if you get the rocks out, it's very, very sticky and it's just full of clay. But other places, there's basically no soil at all, and so you've got to somehow haul it all in. And there are not very many places to find decent soil in Wrangell.
At all.
Yeah, at all.
Yeah, Brian, can you speak more to, you know, having gardened elsewhere? What are some of the challenges you're
polar
seeing?
Polar opposites. Like, we dealt with, I come from the land of sand, and I tell people this, and people look at me like I'm crazy. In the county where I'm from, the largest rock you will encounter that's actually a stone, we have this stuff called iron rock, but it's basically large grains of sand that are plastered together, so it's not actually a rock or a stone. The largest stone you'll find is about the size, half the size of your thumb, in the entire county. The Native American tribes in that area had to trade for chert and flint from 150 miles away, where I'm from. So that's kind of a neat part as far as the no stones and then all the stones. And then it's a very sandy area. Some areas are heavy in clay. Our soil was typically extremely acidic, and you were constantly bringing in things like peat moss and or using, you know, other soil additives to try to get to slow down the movement of water through the soil. Whereas you get here and you need to do things to make it to where the water will move through the soil, because it's just like this pasty, I don't know how to describe it. The soil here is just this pasty clay nastiness. But if you can amend it enough, or if your budget's unlimited and you can buy potting soil and you can and use that, that's another way you can cheat. Or if you're in containers, you know, potting soil is a really, really good way if you don't want to have to go through all the you know, 20 years of the process that Rods went through to get your soil to where it's decent. But polar opposites. It's been quite an adventure.
Yeah, the soil is sort of like making a snowball. I mean, when you first get rid of all the little rocks, you sort of clench a chunk of soil, and you can actually make a soil ball instead of a snowball.
Right.
So I'm curious, when do you use potting soil and when do you don't?
So in my experience, I have to warn everybody, a lot of this is based on, you know, Florida stuff, but most of it translates. One is like the first and foremost is budget. But potting soil, we had a lot of situations where we would be planting, you know, large trees or shrubs and really inferior soil, and we would amend with multiple bags of potting soil. So if you have the budget to do that, I'd say go with it. But in this case, for your containers and your like if you're building really small raised beds, like say a 3x5 or a 4x8 or something, and if that's the only one, I would encourage it, because you're going to speed up the process so much. But again, and you should never look at it's like fishing. Fishing's the same way. You should never look at how much you're spending versus what you're getting back, because all you're going to do is get your feelings hurt. But it just depends on how much you want to spend. But potting soil, that's a misnomer, by the way. So potting soil can be used in the garden or in the landscape anywhere, in my opinion, if you find a good quality potting soil. I don't have any brands to refer to here.
I think in terms of potting soil, I've had the best luck with something they call black gold, which is sold by both the hardware stores. And to me, I've tried various other brands, and that black gold is...
Yeah, there was
it's more expensive, but it's definitely, to me, worth the money.
Yeah, there's a brand that... I'm not going to mention the brand, but there's a brand that Rod had gotten the other day, and it was Powder House Dry, and it was kind of a junky joke of soil in any capacity. But if you're... potting soil can be used anywhere. Like, that's definitely a misnomer. People think, oh, I'm potting this up, or I'm putting this into a pot, so I need to buy potting soil. And all of these are names used by these companies to sell things. And I mean, these are good products, but they're just different names to sell things.
Absolutely. All right, then let's go to a short break. The time is 1:17. And I want to remind everybody that now is your opportunity to ask two of your gardeners in town any questions you might have as you're gardening. So that number is 874-2345. All right, you're tuning in to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:20. We have Rod Brown and Brian Lee in the studio. We're talking gardening. And as always, you can call in to ask a question. That number is 874-2345. And I just wanted to ask you guys, Southeast is in a drought. It's been in one, and I don't know when it will get better exactly. Has that impacted your gardening, or, in what ways could it impact your gardening?
One of the situations that I ran into with a friend talking just last week is if you do have that particular dry spot in your yard, like in your lawn, would be the most susceptible plant situation for the drought. I would try to prepare that area. So if it means amending that area and whatnot, but so far I haven't seen anything outright as far as damage from, from the drought or even flagging plants and whatnot.
Yeah, I think I haven't had any problems, but it depends on what happens with the reservoir. And canopy running in the summer uses a lot of water. So if we would ever enter a hot, dry period where they put on water restrictions, that'd be sort of tough on a lot of the plants. But you got to go with the situation, so.
Yeah, and I would say just to promote Wrangell, and the decisions that they have, the tough decisions that they have to make, as a community, we should all be really mindful, especially during those water watches and whatnot. That's obvious, but just to say it out loud, because we have a finite resource, especially whenever there's a drought going on in terms of our water supply. And, because your plants are flagging, it's way more important that reservoir is to level than it is, than one quadrant of your yard getting watered properly.
All right. Well, let's hope for rain for all the plants right. And for our reservoirs and right. For our hydropower. Okay. And now let's get into some fun stuff. So we were talking about weeds, like what constitutes a weed? Because that's a little different for everybody.
So I actually pulled up, I'm sitting here looking at the biggest dandelion that I've plucked in Wrangell so far. That's almost 3 inches across. I was very proud of that. I thought Rod was going to bat it out of my hand, but he didn't. And I know that all you Wrangellites hate dandelions, and I understand and respect that. But as far as weeds in general, a weed is basically an undesirable plant. So one of the funky things that I saw coming from South Florida to Alaska is we have a plant in South Florida called an anthurium that gets about the same size. It's an extremely similar plant to a skunk cabbage, which people either love or hate here. That plant is, a full size. Imagine the plant that's a full size skunk cabbage, but it's this anthurium instead. It's about a $350 plant. And then I moved to, so this is a treasured plant in my eyes, right? So I moved to Alaska and I see skunk cabbage everywhere. So I'm like, wow, there's an equivalent plant that is gorgeous, same bloom, massive, beautiful green. It looks like it's straight out of Jurassic Park. And then I realized that the entire community is completely polarized on its value. And I say all of that long, convoluted story to say this. A weed is, it's up to you kind of what a weed is. Because it's just basically an undesirable plant. That's not the, you know, that's not Webster's definition, but it's something that, you know, outgrows the plants around it and so on and so forth. But a weed is kind of up to you. Now, dandelions, especially after you've fought them for long enough, like everybody's kind of agrees on that. But Rod, what's your take on all
that's my take. I know some people, for instance, love a stilbe. I hate the stuff, and I just rip it out whenever it occurs. And foxglove, I guess. That's really sort of pretty. But the darn stuff seeds itself all over my garden, and I'm always pulling them out. And I'm sure a lot of people consider that quite nice.
Foxgloves in South Florida, a mature in a 2 gallon pot is about $20.
Wow.
I think that's been one of the neatest things about the move from a place so far away that's tropical basically to here is some of the things that are so dramatically different. Like so many things are also the same, but some of the things that are so different.
Another thing that sort of reminds me about gardening, we live over in Cassiar Street, and we've lived there for probably almost 50 years. Until about 8 years ago, we never saw a deer one. And all of a sudden, about 8 years ago, these darn deer started appearing in our yard and walking up down Cassiar Street. And I see their tracks in my garden all the time, which really irritates me. And they really like some things. Like, unfortunately, they like strawberries, and they like to eat them just in the late fall. And it kills the plants. And they like new raspberry shoots, along with porcupines. And so I just finally gave up trying to grow raspberries and strawberries just because it was a constant battle with a deer. And, I mean, I guess deer are cute and everything, but when they're eating your garden or walking in your garden, they're not so cute. But this is becoming, it's interesting because until about 6-8 years ago, it was never a problem. We never saw deer one in the neighborhood. And then all of a sudden, it's like, good place to live. Some free snacks.
Yeah, I have several friends that the blacktails have wreaked havoc to the tune of a lot of money as well on their gardens. But then I haven't heard of, and that may be something somebody could call in on. I haven't heard of any good solutions aside from, and I know, you know, what I would say is to shoot them, and I get that, but that one is not the one that I'm looking for. But I have good non-lethal solutions for that. Now, don't get me wrong, I love blacktail, so I mean, that's viable too. But so if anybody has any ideas or anything that's been successful for them, definitely let us know. And porcupines I haven't dealt with. So how does that work? A friend said the other day, Rod, that she had a porcupine show up, hung out for a couple days, and then kind of went on its merry way. Is that typical?
I don't know. Unfortunately, I haven't had any, but I know a friend of mine has had terrible problems with porcupines. They get into a patch of raspberry plants, and they just wreak havoc on it. And so he ended up building little removal fences to keep them out. But the only solution I found for deer with the strawberries is I built a little tiny Quonset hut out of fencing, and I tried several different designs and finally doubled it over. And so it would keep the deer out. It was such a pain because then they had to lift off these little sections of fencing to weed, to pick the strawberries, everything else. It just became more work than it was worth. And even then they'd squash the darn things trying to get at the strawberries. And other than that, you know, I've tried wolf urine, which you can buy. I've tried all these magic scents. The only thing I can think of is stake my dog out in the backyard at night, but the dog would hate it and the neighbors would hate it too. So, I don't know. I mean, it's just, trying to think. There's hostas. People love hostas around here, and so do the deer. And, so if you like hostas, I don't know, you're just sort of out of luck. Cause I've had friends, they even came up and ate the hostas off their deck.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the deer have they're like unruly children around here. They definitely have no limits.
But they only like certain things, though. You know, like they've never bothered my carrots. They've never bothered my blueberry bushes. Of course, they don't bother the garlic or the onions.
Right.
And they've never bothered the beans, the green beans I grow. But, boy, I'll tell you, the strawberries, especially late in the fall, the new raspberry canes, hostas. There you go.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, gardening, I mean, you really just have to take what you're given. You know, you have to kill your darlings, you know, if you realize that your environment is really just not going to be hospitable for them.
Actually, okay, so...
Or not.
That's a huge... The point that you just made is something that I've talked with hundreds of customers about, and I want to bring this up because you just reminded me. So you have a customer come in, and the customer goes, I've planted such and such in this spot for 15 years, and it keeps dying. Or I've planted such and such, and the deer always eat it. The solution to that, logically, is to stop doing that. And it sounds, I sound, you know, rude when I say that, but we get so bent on growing a certain thing because, you know, grandmother grew it there, or mom grew it there, or dad grew it there, or whatever, or because we enjoy that thing. And there does come a point where you have to be a little bit pliable and go, okay, I'm not going to grow this. And Rod's talking about it. I mean, Rod, like, his entire yard is structured so that he can grow what he wants, when he wants, within reason. And the deer, obviously, that's, I don't know what you can do about that, but think about that. If you tried to grow something in the same spot for 3 years, and whether it's a pest or it's not doing well in that spot, then stop and do something else.
Yeah, that reminds me of one thing. I really like lilac bushes, and so I'd grow lilac bushes, but they'd only last a few years and they die. And I finally, I think I read on the internet, but anyway, the solution seems to be, at least as it has been for me, is take some dolomite lime, and every spring spread a big circle of dolomite lime on the top of the soil around the lilac, and that seems to do the trick because I haven't had one die since.
Hmm. All right, you heard it here first.
Right.
That's a good one. That's a good tip. Okay, then let's go on to plant names. Brian, this is something you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, so... One of the things that people get very excited about is they have a certain plant that grandmother called, you know, whatever it is. I'm thinking of a plant called that we call Wandering Jew back home. Elsewhere, it's called Storkesia, and then it has a couple of other common names. One thing that I think is really interesting about the gardening community is we get so attached to a given name of something, not realizing that there are other names. Like I was looking up skunk cabbage the other day, and there's a name for it that's swamp lantern. So keep that in mind whenever you're talking. So the relevance of that, one, is conversational, but two, whenever you're at the garden center or you're looking for something or asking for something, sometimes it takes a little bit of research, and you might want to hit the Google machine and type in what you think something is, and then see what pictures come up, validate that that's what it is, and then look at those individual sites and see if that's what the name is. The reason I say that is because whenever you're looking at an employee that's tired or whatever, and you're asking for something, and they're like, ma'am or sir, I have no idea what that is, it really helps. Spend the time on any front when it comes to your gardening to educate yourself. There's so much information readily available. And there are so many people within this community alone that you could probably go by either hardware store or either grocery store any day of the week and find somebody that would give their best answer on a gardening question, because it's something that's so prominent. Same as fishing here. So keep that in mind as far as plant names, and don't be convinced that, you know, the one name is all it's known as.
Another thing that's sort of fun is to try something different. Like last summer, I planted a small garden of carnivorous plants, and I actually planted outside first, but then figured to do better in my greenhouse. Last fall, switched into my greenhouse. And most of these carnivorous plants aren't found in Alaska, although... there are a few types that are found in Alaska, but these are mainly found farther south or even in Minnesota where I grew up. And they've actually, some of them, done quite well. And also when I was a kid in Minnesota, I had a wildflower garden, and these were mainly sort of shade-tolerant plants that grew in the woods. And so over the years, I've tried out, you know, I got some, my dad sent me some up originally from my original garden, and then on eBay and Etsy, I've bought some others like Jack in the Pulpit or the Yellow Lady Slipper Orchid, things like that don't normally grow here, but some of them actually grow very nicely here, and especially that yellow lady slipper orchid. It's a beautiful, beautiful flower, and not real easy to grow, but and Jack in the Pulpit's just sort of an interesting flower, and various things like that. So it's always fun to experiment, you know, and you can usually find tips on the internet. I think Juno has a pretty active gardening group that has a lot of information about gardening in Southeast, and you can often find out whether it'll grow or not. But or for instance, I love trumpet vines, and I've tried 5-6 times to grow a trumpet vine. It just isn't happening. And but that's how you learn.
Yeah, you'll try something new, even if it seems like it might be out of place. But if it doesn't work, it just doesn't work. Yeah, okay.
Go ahead. To add on to that, one of the many things that were so spectacular and wonderful for me whenever I showed up in Wrangell, as I was driving down Case, I realized, wow, I recognize these plants. We grow hydrangeas back home. Barberry grows a little bit further north of us. A lot of the annuals and perennials don't necessarily follow those same rules as far as being an annual and perennial where I'm from. They may just be an annual because our winters are too wet, or they may just be a winter annual because the summers are too hot. But there were a lot of crossover. So if there is something that you want to try, I would say try it. One of the things, actually, I want to ask you, Rod, I really do not want to purchase rosemary at the grocery. No offense to anybody, but just because it's so outrageous. But how does rosemary do here?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Okay, so then that's something else. So that's one of those things that as soon as I have the opportunity to get a rosemary cutting and get it growing, that's something that I'm going to try, because it's actually one of the toughest plants that I've grown back in Florida. But the problem is it doesn't like a whole lot of water, so it may not translate. But at the same time, succulents don't like a whole lot of water, but they love Wrangell, which is... It makes no sense to me, but that's how it is. Our succulent population in Wrangell is pretty spectacular. The hens and chicks and all that other stuff that we can grow is pretty great. The moral of the story with all of this, by the way, is experimenting and having fun and just trying stuff. And whenever you go over to Olga's house and she has something that you like, and that's a real person. Y'all know who she is. And she has something you like, mention to her, hey, you know, maybe I could get some of that, or do you know of anybody that has some of that that I could have a cutting of and whatnot, and just try it. The constant experimentation. The garden is technically a living thing anyways, and in terms of your garden design, it should be a living and evolving thing as well. And that's an opinion, but I mean, it's really fun that way to go out and see something different or to have tried something new. It's really satisfying for me to try something. I can't tell you how excited I am about the rhubarb that I got from Rod. It is so simple. Everybody on Wrangell it's rhubarb. It could fall out of the back of your truck on the side of the road, and I think it would grow. But I've never grown it before, and it's a macro plant. It's this huge plant. It's tough as boot leather, but it's something that I'm excited about. And I think we should all cherish those idiosyncrasies about gardening and what makes it special. So, yeah, sorry, ran over, right?
Well, actually, a really good source for unusual plants is either eBay or Etsy. And you can get them from some specialized nurseries, but first of all, a lot of the specialized nurseries don't want to ship to Alaska.
No.
And they want to charge you a whole bunch of money for anything that's unusual. But amazingly enough, on both eBay and Etsy, I've gotten a lot of unusual plants, and I've had pretty good luck having them shipped to Alaska, and that's just
is that where all of the carnivorous plants came from?
They actually came from an outfit in called Sarracenia Northwest.
Okay, yeah, and the Sarracenia, which is pitcher plants, that was really neat whenever I first peeked my head into Rod's greenhouse, which was last year, and I saw this container with all these carnivorous plants. I was blown away because I was like, those are really, really not supposed to be here in terms of, you know, how cold it gets versus the plants themselves. But so, and that's, again, back to the fun of gardening, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of philosophy behind gardening, you know, there's a lot of profoundness to gardening. Well, I think we had a few more questions, but I think we should go ahead and wrap it up. This has been a really great show. Thank you, too, for coming into the studio and chatting with me today. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we sign out?
Can't think of anything.
I hadn't thought of that. Aside from, just to reiterate what I just said. So, get outside. And I say this on Slapfish all the time. Just get outside. It's Wrangell. It's always sunny. The halibut are always good looking. And get outside and just go do stuff. I mean, we live in... honestly, one of the most beautiful places that I've ever seen in my life. And there's so much to do. The people are wonderful. Wrangell's wonderful. The gardening and the things that we can grow, the list is immense. And there's no reason, even if you just go buy one container and set it on your porch and try, even if you kill it, that's fine. Like, somebody will take the extra soil and incorporate it into their garden. I do that a lot. Whenever somebody does kill something, and then buy something else and kill it. But, and I'm joking when I say that, but just try it, experiment with it, have fun with it. This is, you know, I'm 18 years since I first started gardening, 18, almost 20 years. And I've killed so many things and I've had so many successes, and it's just a constantly evolving process. And it should just be fun and something that is kind of a decompressing, cathartic thing for you in your life. And that's what I've got to say about that.
I think that sums it up.
Right.
Okay, Rod, thank you so much. Brian, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
So, thank you for tuning in to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. We will be back next week with another guest. Bye.